Hi, I'm Dr. James Forslam. Today I would like to take some of your precious time to review the topic of diabetes mellitus with me. Type 2 diabetes accounts for more than 90% of all cases. Significant complications of diabetes include neuropathy, nephropathy, cardiovascular disease, and retinopathy. Whereas death from cardiovascular disease has declined in the past 2-3 decades, death from diabetes continues to increase. Diabetes mellitus involves several syndromes of either impairment of insulin secretion and/or peripheral resistance to insulin, leading to hyperglycemia. The three major classifications of diabetes are type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and gestational diabetes. In type 1 diabetes mellitus, patients require insulin to prevent hyperglycemia and ketosis. This is the group of patients that get the classic diabetic ketoacidosis, DKA, when insulin requirement is not met. Type 1 is immune-mediated with humoral markers of anti-islet cell antibodies and anti-insulin antibodies. In type 2 diabetes, there is impaired insulin secretion due to beta cell dysfunction. There is also insulin resistance resulting in increased hepatic glucose production and decreased peripheral glucose uptake. The main symptoms of diabetes mellitus include the classic polys, polyphagia, polydipsia, and polyuria. Type 1 presents in the first 2 decades of life. However, type 1 can present in adulthood, and we call that LADA, L-A-D-A, latent onset diabetes of adulthood. Type 2 diabetes typically presents after the fourth decade of life. Onset of type 2 is most common in people age 45 to 64. It appears that one's BMI is positively correlates with one's risk of developing type 2 diabetes. That is to say, the more excess weight one has, the more resistance the muscle cells and tissue cells have to insulin, whether it is endogenous or injected. Distinguishing features of type 1 and type 2. For the body weight, type 1 often a history of weight loss before presentation. For type 2, the history of weight gain before diagnosis. Family history. In type 1, if the father has type 1 diabetes, the odds of his child having it is 1 in 17. However, if the mother's age is less than 25, the child's risk is 1 in 25. If the mother is greater than 25 years of age, the odds 1 in 100. Type 1 is associated with other autoimmune disorders such as Hashimoto's thyroiditis, Graves' disease, vitiligo, adrenal insufficiency, and pernicious anemia. For type 2, there is no association with autoimmune disorders. Glycemic patterns. In type 1, there is a higher variability with greater variability and exaggerated hyperglycemia response to stressors and meals. In type 2, the blood glucose is more stable throughout the day. Response to oral agent. For type 1, non-responsive. For type 2, responsive. Sensitivity to insulin. For type 1, the sensitivity is normal. For type 2, the sensitivity to insulin is reduced. Islet cell antibodies and GAD antibodies are detected in 80% of type 1 at the onset of diagnosis. This is not present in type 2. The GAD is glutamic acid decarboxylase antibody. C-peptide is very low or undetectable in type 1. C-peptide is detectable or elevated in type 2. Complications of diabetes. As mentioned before, nephropathy, neuropathy, retinopathy, and cardiovascular diseases are common. The not so common complications are acanthosis nigricans and necrobiosis lipoidica. Acanthosis nigricans are velvety, black, thickened plaques occurring in the flexural creases like inguinal crease, axilla, and the size of the neck. These are frequently associated with insulin resistance and obesity. Acanthosis nigricans lesions can also be related to underlying malignancies, usually GI and lung. Necrobiosis lipoidica is an inflammatory skin condition frequently associated with diabetes or impaired glucose tolerance. The lesions of necrobiosis lipoidica are often asymptomatic, indurated oral oval plaques with central atrophy and yellow pigmentation and red-brown margins. How does one diagnose diabetes? Symptoms of diabetes, polysymptoms, ketosis, hyperglycemia plus random glucose greater than 200, or fasting greater than 126 times 2, or random sugar 200 for times 2, or 2 hour post 75 gram glucose times 2, or a single hemoglobin A1C greater than 6.5. This is actually becoming a more commonly used diagnosis. Hemoglobin A1C greater than 6.5 has been used more and more commonly nowadays. Treatment objective of diabetes is glycemic control. Glycemic control reduces long-term complications of neuropathy, nephropathy, cardiovascular disease, and retinopathy. Insulin therapy is required for all type 1 patients and some type 2 patients. Total daily dosage of insulin depends on the type of diabetes, diet, exercise, and degree of insulin resistance. Some clinicians feel that the traditional sliding scale approach is reactive. It leads to greater problem with hyperglycemia. Sliding scale is not encouraged for long-term diabetic patients managed for residents of nursing homes. Only insulin is approved for the use of management of diabetes in pregnant patients. Severe high polyuria and polydipsia may indicate hyperglycemia and dehydration. Key points in the initial management of DKA, diabetic ketoacidosis, or HHS, hyperosmotic hyperglycemic syndrome. The initial management of DKA or HHS is 1 liter of normal saline and reassess. If the pH is greater than 6.9, and no, then no bicarb. If pH is less than 6.9, then give 100 millimole of bicarb in 400 ml of water and 20 ml equivalent of KCl over 2 hours. Then use regular insulin, 0.1 unit per kilogram bolus, and then 0.1 unit per kilogram per hour drip. If potassium is less than 3.3, hold insulin and give 20 ml equivalent per hour of KCl until potassium is greater than 3.3. If potassium is greater than 5.2, do not give potassium. Keep potassium between 3.3 and 5.2. Keep in mind that a healthily perfused kidney would give urine output of greater than 0.5 ml per kilogram per hour. The diagnostic criteria for DKA: glucose greater than 250, pH less than 7.3, bicarb less than 15, and there should be moderate amount of ketonuria or ketonemia. In HHS, the criteria is greater than 600 of glucose, pH greater than 7.3, bicarb greater than 15, and there's minimal ketonuria or ketonemia. Remember to adjust the sodium to 1.6 mL equivalent for every 100 points above 100 glucose. So a patient with HHS and a reported glucose of 700 and sodium reported as 140, the true concentration of sodium would be 700 minus 100, that's 600. 6 times 1.6 equals 9.6, or the sodium should be 150 actual. That is to say that the reported sodium is 1.6 less than it should be in the setting of severe hyperglycemia. A patient with gestational diabetes has a near normal birth defect rate if the A1C is kept below 6.5, so that the patient with gestational diabetes should keep the A1C below 6.5. The rapid-acting insulins are Lispro, Aspart, Regular, and Glulysine. For the intermediate insulin is MPH. The long-acting ones are Glargine and Detemer. Oral agents for diabetes: Metformin is a biguanide, usually first drug for diabetes type 2. Metformin works by lowering glucose production in the liver and improving the body's sensitivity to insulin, so it uses insulin more effectively. Side effects of metformin: it lowers B12, that causes nausea and bloating, abdominal pain. Sulfonylurea helps bodies secrete more insulin. Sulfonylureas include gliburide, glipizide, and glimepiride. Major side effects of sulfonylureas are low blood sugar and weight gain. The thiazolidinediones make body's tissue more sensitive to insulin. The most used agent is pioglitazone or Actos. Possible side effects are risk for CHF, bladder CA, and risk of bone fractures and weight gain. DPP-4 inhibitors. They help reduce blood sugar levels with moderate effect. Examples include sitagliptin, that is Januvia, saxagliptin, Onglyza, and linagliptin, that is Tradjenta. Possible side effects include risk of pancreatitis. GLP-1 receptor agonists are injectable medications that slow digestion and help lower blood glucose levels. GLP-1 receptor agonists is often associated with weight loss, and there's a reduction in the risk of MI with the use of GLP-1 agonists. Examples of GLP-1 receptor agonists are exenatide, liraglutide, and semaglutide. The side effects of these medications are risk of pancreatitis and nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. These are possible. The SGLT2 inhibitors increase urinary glucose excretion, lower blood glucose, and improve peripheral insulin sensitivity. SGLT2 inhibitors reduce the risk of heart attack and stroke. Examples of SGLT2 inhibitors include canagliflozin, as in Invokana, dapagliflozin, as in Farxiga, and empagliflozin, as in Jardiance. Common side effects for the SGLT2 inhibitor class are vaginal yeast and UTIs, and low blood pressure, hypercholesterolemia, and risk of diabetic peroneal gangrene. Contraindications to diabetic medications. Metformin is contraindicated to renal insufficiency when the patient's creatinine is greater than 1.4 in women and greater than 1.5 in men. Treat CHF. Patient with treated CHF, hypoxemia, hypotension, and binge alcohol use are not good candidates for the use of metformin. Again, metformin should be used with caution in patients in women with creatinine greater than 1.4, men creatinine greater than 1.5, in patients with treated CHF, hypoxemia, hypotension, and binge alcohol use, as these conditions increase the risk of lactic acidosis. Thiazolidinediones are contraindicated in patients in classes 3 and 4 CHF and individuals with active liver disease. Metformin, thiazolidinediones, acarbose, and DPP-4 inhibitors and SGLT2 inhibitors do not cause hypoglycemia when used as monotherapy. Metformin lowers LDL and triglyceride but has no effect on HDL. The incretins are gut-derived hormones released in response to meals. The incretin mimetics, exenatide and liraglutide, and the amylin agonist pramlintide, both stimulate glucose-dependent insulin release in response to meals, inhibit glucagon release, and slow gastric emptying in patients with type 2 diabetes when given subcutaneously. The incretin mimetic exenatide lowers A1C about 0.4 to 1% when added to sulfonylurea, thiazolidinediones, sulfonamides, when these agents are not enough to lower A1C. Liraglutide, when used in type 2 diabetes alone, lowers A1C by 0.5 to 1% when used alone. And when liraglutide is added to metformin, sulfonylurea, or thiazolidinediones, can reduce A1C to 1.2% when used in combination with metformin, sulfonylurea, or thiazolidinediones. Pramlintide lowers A1C by about half a percent. Subcutaneous incretin-based therapy are associated with nausea and vomiting and are to be avoided in patients with gastroparesis. Liraglutide cannot be used in patients with personal or family history of medullary thyroid cancer or in patients with MEN2 syndrome. Monotherapy failed because of many factors, including decrease in beta cell function, obesity, non-compliance, non-compliance with treatment, and lack of exercise. Diabetes nephropathy. About one quarter of type 1 and type 2 patients develop nephropathy. A smaller fraction of these patients go on to have ESRD, end-stage renal disease. Native Americans, Mexican Americans, and African Americans have higher risk of developing ESRD than the white individuals. Diabetic nephropathy is usually asymptomatic until late in the course. Nephropathy is characterized by proteinuria and rising creatinine. Urine albumin should be performed after 5 years of type 1 and at the time of diagnosis for type 2. Factors that increase albuminuria include fever, infection, exercise, CHF, marked hyperglycemia, marked hypertension, pyuria, and hematuria. Use of ACE inhibitors should be applied to all hypertensive patients and non-hypertensive patients with type 1 diabetes and albuminuria. Significant albuminuria is defined as less than 30. So a normal individual would have less than 30 micrograms of albumin per milligram of creatinine. Albuminuria is defined as greater than 30 micrograms of albumin per milligram of creatinine. Diabetic retinopathy is the leading cause of blindness in patients 20 to 74 years of age and strongly related to duration of disease. Risk factors for diabetic retinopathy include hyperglycemia, presence of nephropathy, hypertension, and pregnancy in type 1 diabetes patients.